Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, whatever time it is that you're joining me for this Pentertainment podcast. Thank you once again, my Inky Savages, for joining us. This week's episode of the podcast is sponsored by my good buddies at PenShallot.com. Do not forget to go to PenShallot.com and click on the radio podcast link at the top. It's going to bring you to a passcode field. You type in Penboy Roy, one word, and it's going to bring you to some pretty awesome discounts exclusive to the Pentertainment podcast listeners. And while you're at it, please make sure you click on the bottom right and join the ink rewards that PenShallot has. All right, so basically you order and you buy stuff. You buy your favorite pens and inks, and then you earn one ink drop for each $10 you spend. And then you can cash in your ink drops for free ink on your next order. And then you repeat the process. There's a bunch of information on the Ink Shallot website. If you want more information, it's called the Ink Rewards FAQ, who can join the Pen Shallot Ink Rewards program, any Pen Shallot customer. How do I join the Pen Shallot Ink Reward program? All you have to do is have an account. Check out the information. It's a lot of interesting information. It's going to help you get set up. PenShallot is a major retailer here in the U.S. supporting the fountain pen virus, and we owe it to all of our retailers, especially the ones that sponsor the Pentertainment podcast business. So make sure you go to PenShallot.com and check out the specials at the radio podcast link, and don't forget to sign up for their ink rewards. Now, before I get started with this week's podcast, I just want to give you guys a quick disclaimer. This podcast is not scripted and therefore will contain potty mouth words, mostly from myself. So be forewarned. You have been warned. Now, on to the podcast.
The Penboy Roy Entertainment Podcast. Stage 7.
And Inky.
So I don't really have a topic in mind today, but I do have a pen I want to talk about. A pen brand, really. Tell me what you know about Bexley. Give me everything you got.
Bexley is,
I don't mean to
American...
interrupt you, but I want to just share that I've only done one review on a Bexley pen back when I first started. So continue.
Mm-hmm. Oh, can I do it now? Can I go?
Yes.
Oh, okay, good. All right.
But what brings this up for me, just so you know, no, I'm just kidding. Please go ahead. Tell us what you know about the Bexley brand, because I forgot all my history and stuff, but not to interrupt you again.
Okay.
This time for
real. So, Bexley, it is a company that is based in the United States. There's a fellow named Howard, and I'm blanking on his last name at the moment, but
it's not Bexley, is it?
No. Okay. And he manufactures, it's pretty much like kind of like a twin, not twin, but like similar company to like Edison, where they're, you know, acrylic pens manufactured here in the United States, but they use, you know, Yovo nib units or, you know, German made nib units. So, but they have a variety of, and they've been in the pen industry for a long time. And often do a lot of like owners club pens. I think it's a once a year sort of limited edition where if you own a Bexley, you could then be qualified to purchase one of these owners club pens that then you could purchase like directly through Bexley. It's a rather convoluted system that they have set up, but like it's supposed to be exclusive to previously, you know, just only Bexley owners, that sort of thing. That's what I know.
No, but how would they know if, like if I wanted to buy a owner's club Bexley pen, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to say, oh, well, nope, you don't own a Bexley pen, so you don't get to buy this one? Who's going to do that?
Well, that is also, it's kind of like a weird situation there too, because like even after a while too, I think because they make a certain amount of them, and then after a while I remember that they actually release them to general consumers as well, but like there is like there's like a certificate that comes with the Bexley pen that you're supposed to fill out and send in to prove that you own a Bexley,
right? Which nobody will ever
be able
do.
To buy, which no one fills out the warranty or stamp or dealer stamp or anything like that. It's just additional headache of paperwork. So
right,
yeah. So, but even I'm looking at Independance, like, so Independance.com, Mike and Linda Kennedy, they actually have a 2018 owners club on their website. So that gives you a kind of idea that if there's an edition that they make and they don't sell all of them to the owners, then it becomes available publicly. So,
Right. I think it's just a marketing ploy just to get people to want to buy their pens, right? I
mean, yeah,
that's got to be it, because, like, imagine, like, I'm looking at these Owners Club pens, right? MSRP, right. $275. Are you really going to go to a show and look at a table of pens and say, hey, I want to buy this one. It's at a discounted price for $220. Here's $220. Do you really think the person on the other side of the table is going to be like, nah, dude, nah, you're not a Owners Club member.
That's nah, gonna have to turn you away.
Yeah,
that's it.
Take that $220 fucking dollars and shove it up your ass and get away from us. It's not how it works. You know, they see you have the money, they're gonna let you buy it. Doesn't matter if you had them before or not.
But yeah, that's what I don't like about the whole idea of it, is that it's too exclusive. Like, you want to, like, pens, you want to include more people into it. You want to get people. You want to, you know, to use the antiquated parlance of Pen Boy Roy, you want to infect them, you know, with the fountain pen enthusiasm. So, like, you know, if you're just trying to keep people out by making this group of pen buyers more exclusive, I feel that defeats the purpose.
I agree. And I think that, like I said, it's just a marketing ploy. It's just a way to get the demand up so that they can move their stuff, right? But I think it kind of backfired because, you know, I go on to a lot of these social media platforms where I'm looking at pen people talk and enthusiasts, and no one ever really talks about Bexley, right?
Yeah, they're. I mean, I think it's like a, like I said, I think it's something that was kind of like part of the old standard, you know, so like back in the days of Art Brown and June Pen Shops and the, a lot more brick and mortar stores, I feel, would probably carry Bexley, and Bexley would be popular at shows or through other resellers. But I think in the modern age of things, when you consider how popular that Franklin Christoph and Edison have become, I think that Bexley is not in the minds of consumers these days.
Well, do you think that Bexley owners, your buddy Howard, do you think he's trying to do anything about it, or is he kind of just still stuck in the past and he's just doing what he does and that's all there is to it?
I don't really know what he's up to per se, so I can't, I don't want to, you know, make any judgments about what his marketing efforts are, and then he, you know, emails me or calls me up and is quite angry at my comments regarding it. But in terms of where I've seen them with other retailers and you know, generated any sort of information online about it, they don't seem that they're with the current flow of things on the internet, and with the complete stoppage of any pen show that's going on, you know, there's really no way for people to know about this. You know, there's no way for them to know about their brand other than maybe, like, let's say, for example, a Pen World ad. Maybe that's the only way, you know, that they get some generation out of that, because that is like one of the old school methods that people would usually use to contact the community. But it's so largely online now that there's, you know, like, everything else becomes a distant second in terms of, like, how you could reach a mass audience.
I mean, I wonder how they make money. How is this guy making money? Because I just don't see their pens on a whole lot of websites. Like, you can go to several online retailer websites and, you know, a couple of them have Bexley on their list of brands that they have in stock, maybe.
Yeah.
And then looking at Independance, so it's spelled indie-pen-dance.com. That's the site you were mentioning, Linda Kennedy's site.
Yeah.
She only has, let's say, three modern fountain pen brands, Edison, Bexley, and Pilot. And that's all she's got. Everything else is about vintage and restored fountain pens from the past. But other than websites like that, I don't really see Bexley around. Like, you don't see them advertising a lot. You don't see them making new models. I think the last pen I bought by Bexley was off of you. It's the Poseidon Magnum 2. And it was in the
green. I did see that on Instagram lately, on your Pen Boy Roy Instagram account.
So I like the acrylic. I like everything about it. It's well made. It's very vintagey looking. I don't remember what the MSRP was because it's not on any sites, pretty much. But I see it on sale.
Yeah, it's a discontinued model.
Yeah, it's a discontinued model.
I think it was under 200, I want to say.
Yeah. I mean, do you believe Bexley stands in the same, I guess, weight class as Edison and Franklin Christoph and Leonardo?
These days, I probably would say not in the same regard, because like if you even if you look up like BexleyPen.com, I try to even find if there's a Bexley website that's directly on there, and there's nothing available. Like it goes to a website, but it just seems like it's a parked website. Like they actually don't have like a Bexley company website to even look at what the current models are. I only see like retailer websites like Nibs.com, eBay, Peyton Street Pens, and you know. So this, I really don't think that they, you know, are taking. I mean, I even took a quick look on Instagram too, see if they have like any profile on there.
They don't.
But, you know, it's a shame though, because I mean, from you know when I've had experience with them in the past, that you know they were a pretty solid pen, and I mean I've seen yours, and I think it, you know, that for what it is, I think they could be in that same weight class, but I just don't think that they're doing anything to really expose the brand.
Yeah, and I think that's too bad, because like you just said, the pen is not a bad pen; it holds its weight. Like I said, I have the Poseidon Magnum 2, and mm-hmm. it's a very vintagey looking pen. It has like one of those caps that have like a huge Homer Simpson shaped cap, you know, Homer yeah. Simpson's head shaped cap. Yeah. If they made this in yellow, I'd call it the Homer Simpson pen.
Nice.
And
you
it
put
also
like little put little googly eyes on it.
It also, you know what it reminds me of? The I'm typing because I can't type and not look as well as you, but it reminds me of the Pelican pen. The Pelican pen that
Oh, right, the M101, the yeah. M101N, yeah.
Yeah.
And by the way, I actually clocked myself in the other day when, because I was doing typing club,
oh, yeah?
just to test myself, and I was getting between 75 and 80 words per minute.
Good for you. I clocked myself.
Suck it.
Dick. I was at maybe 30, you know? God, I suck.
Nice.
Yeah, so, but yeah, it reminds me of the Pelican M101. Mm-hmm. N. As a matter of fact, it has the exact same design minus the piston filler. Did you notice that?
It's very, yeah, very, very similar to it.
It's super similar. So it's, yeah. I guess it's a homage. Homage? Is that right? Homage? Homage? Whatever it is.
I usually say homage, yeah.
It's an homage. The Pelican of yesteryear.
Yeah. Which I think that's more their style. Their style is... are really kind of adapting the vintage style to a modern acrylic pen with, you know, usually cartridge converter systems, but they've done piston fillers as well. Mm-hmm. So I think that's, I mean, but like I was saying, like it's a good pen. It's a good quality pen.
No, it sure is.
You know, it's just a shame. I just feel like if with a little bit of massaging in terms of like, you know, let's say coming out with, you know, launching a line, putting some social backing behind it, kind of making a big splash about it. I think they could be a bigger brand, but I just don't know where their situation's at right now.
Right. And I wonder if their design style also contributes to why it's not a well-known. I mean, not that it's not well-known, but it's not a popular brand. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. everything is vintage inspired. Do you think that if Bexley went a modern approach, or rather with a more modern approach, do you think that they'd reach more people? I mean, maybe, maybe not. Like, what do you think?
Maybe it's to just differentiate themselves from each other. Because, like, if you look at, let's say, Franklin Christoph versus Edison kind of, to me at least, feels a little bit more on the vintage sort of side of mm-hmm. design, whereas Franklin Christoph has a little bit of like a vintage, but feels more modern in terms
Certainly.
Of like its progressive designs and technologies that they want to use, as far as like the, you know, the gripping and the facets they put and stuff or whatever. So there's a lot of, I feel like there's a lot more design consideration that moves the Franklin Christoph in a more progressive direction, whereas like Edison's more about the traditional, you know, kind of replicating antique filling mechanisms and things like that, and really, you know, tapping into that nostalgia of the antique style. So it, you know, if you're going to fit yourself in with that crowd, maybe something that blends the both a little bit more and tries to do a little bit more of the vintage, but like then, you know, just something that kind of put itself out from the group in terms of you know, something that they not neither of them do, but like do it somewhat differently, like in terms of aesthetics or materials or function of the pen, but you know, I don't know. I'm just kind of rambling on now.
No. I mean, I hear what you're saying. You're talking about what Bexley can do to be in the same, I guess, weight class as them. But yeah. I'm asking, I guess I didn't ask it correctly. What do you think Bexley, not what do you think Bexley should do, but where do you think they stand? And do you think the way they do things now kind of alienates themselves or kind of isolates themselves from the other brands? Like, if you look at Bexley pens, they're very vintage inspired, right? Whereas mm-hmm. Edison can be a combination between vintage filling mechanisms and modern style. You know what I mean?
Right.
And
right.
Franklin Kristoff is totally modern styling with a flavor of antiquity, in a sense. Mm-hmm. But Bexley is completely on one extreme end of the spectrum where it's all vintage. If you showed me this Poseidon Magnum 2, I'd look at it and be like, oh, yeah, that could totally be a pen from the 30s or the 40s. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
Like, do you think that separates them too much where they're isolated and as a result people are just like, ah, it's a little too extreme for me, not my thing? Or do you think it's mostly just in their lack of advertising and commercialing and all that stuff?
I think that there is a market for it. I think that there would still be a market for something of what their design looks like, but you know, it's just it's not out there. I think they have a strong enough product and that it is different enough that they could, you know, kind of hold their own and then become something of a, you know, in a competition of especially of American pen makers, which is not a very crowded market to be in, but they just don't put enough behind it, you know.
Mm-hmm. So you think that if they came out strong with their marketing, that you think that they would be up there with Leonardo and Edison and Franklin Kristoff?
Well, I mean, I look more because I wouldn't put like Leonardo into the mix of things because Leonardo's I feel. We're talking about like American pen brands, so brands that are made in America.
Oh, okay.
I feel that if, you know, like I feel that they could compete better as that, like, and kind of go, that's like one of your key selling points, you know, whereas like some people may feel more strongly about like, oh, I need to get something imported. I need to get from Japan, from Italy or whatever. But like, I feel that they could still thrive under a made in America, you know, sort of banner, mm-hmm. you know.
Right. I hear what you're saying. I also feel like the style and brand, I'm sorry, models and the line of pens made by Bexley is somewhat limited. Wouldn't you say?
You feel it's a little tired or just like a little stale.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, there's like three different models and they haven't changed. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It kind of feels, I don't want to say boring because it sounds judgmental, but it doesn't interest me as much. So, like, I know the brand Bexley as well as I know any other brand. You name a brand and I know the brand. I know of the brand. I know of Esterbrook. I know Lamy, Marlin, Namiki, Pilot, Pelican, any brand out there. But mm-hmm. when it comes to Bexley, I look at this pen and I'm like, well, it's well made. It's gorgeous. It's not a bad pen. It's sub $200, has a Yovo nib. The pedigree sounds like it should stand out just among the rest of those with the same pedigree.
Right.
But for some reason, it just doesn't pique my interest. And I can't really place my finger on why. I'm wondering if the reason why it doesn't pique my interest is the same as everybody else's. And that's why Bexley is not out there the same way or is not as big as the other brands that share its same pedigree. Or if it's just because they choose to be a small company. I mean, I don't know. It's an anomaly of the universe that somebody needs to find answers for.
Yeah, I mean, I bet you will probably get some responses being like, oh, you know, I love Bexley pens. I have a whole bunch of them. And then you get probably a lot more people who, especially the ones that are new to the entire pen game, that they'll be like, I've never heard of this brand. I've heard of, you know, Edison and Franklin Kristoff before, but I've never heard of Bexley before. I have no idea what a Bexley is. So this might be news to a lot of people.
I wonder how many people listening right now have heard of Bexley or have not heard of Bexley. Please write us in at pentertainmentpodcast@gmail.com. And I'm just curious because I feel like it's a noteworthy pen. It's a well-made pen. I did a review of, I forgot what the name was. Fuck, what was it that I did? It was like one of my first reviews. I couldn't even pronounce the name of the damn color. Agate, I don't know. It's spelled A-G-A-T-E. Somebody corrected me on it. I just can't remember. But I can't remember the name of the pen. Damn it. Whatever.
I put my fast typing fingers. I'm going to go look on your YouTube.
Yeah, get to work, man. Yeah, get to work. Should be a lot faster.
Going quick.
I mean, what are the newer Bexley brand models? Like, I can't even
think
of...
Oh, it's the Patriarch?
Is it the Patriarch? The Patriarch. That's right.
Yeah.
And mine was the green
Boom.
But I just, you know what it is? Like, what's the most newest model of Bexley pen?
And I have no idea.
See the thing? And of all the people that should know, shouldn't we know, but we don't?
No, we don't.
But is that our fault, or is that Bexley's fault?
I would say that would not land in our responsibility to know about all these things. Like, I think it needs to come about by some form of information or another, and there's not enough people talking about it, so.
I agree. And what about, what happens if you go to Facebook and search Bexley Pen Company? Let me see.
Let's see. Probably an update from like 2016 or something like that. Let's see. Well, let's take a look.
So Independence comes up.
Yeah,
but do they even have a... No, they don't even have a page that I can find.
No, I'm trying to look up Bexley Pen Company. Let's see. No, I'm not getting anything here. I am drawing a blank.
Wow. Isn't that crazy? I mean, it's a company that's still around. It's not like they went out of business and everything is gone. No, they're still making pens, right? They're still actively out there selling pens.
This is a question that I do not know, actually.
This is like the X-Files of fucking fountain pens, man. It's like the Bexley Pen Company. What's going on with you guys? Make some noise, Bexley. Come on.
I'll be Mulder.
What's that?
You'd be Scully.
Scully. Who got beat up more? Whoever got beat up more, you get to be.
But we're talking about Leonardo's. I got a chance to play around with the elastic fine nib.
Oh, you mean the Yovo nib? Talk to me about them. Let's hear it.
So I had them. I have them on the Momento Zero Grande.
Which
and
one?
The new piston models.
The primary manipulation one?
No. Those are on the way, hopefully.
Dude, I mean, are they rare? Because I saw pictures of them. I saw the picture of the green one
yes.
and the red one, and they are so sexy. This was the first time in my life where I actually became sexually aroused by a pen.
Wow.
I looked at that thing, and I'm like, I have got to have one that is sexy. It's not even it was like magic. I was looking at that pen and it didn't even make sense to me. My brain couldn't even fucking comprehend what it was.
I saw their on their Instagram. Did we talk about this before? On their Instagram story a few weeks ago. All I saw were the Brooks rods, the acrylic blocks that he sent. That's all they took. They took a picture of the acrylic, the one that they call the Vesuvio, the red one. And all I saw was the acrylic, and I was like, sold. I am getting one.
Right.
I was like, I don't even know. I don't even need to know what it is that you're making out of that. I am getting it.
Yeah, and it's so gorgeous.
So I'm kind of getting myself warmed up by checking out the new Grandes, the Fjord Aqua and the Marina, the Capri, I believe it is,
okay.
Which are like kind of like the flecked marbled finishes of the Grande piston, and trying out the elastic and the music because I hadn't had any experience with those previously with any other Leonardo model, and I wanted to see how they worked with the ebonite feeds, you know, nice wet lines. So I was playing around with those earlier today, and you know, just actually testing them out. Especially the elastic, I was curious to see what the flexibility of the elastic was, because when people hear that elastic flex, it's like they're thinking, okay, wet noodle time, you know, it's like, but I already kind of knew based on the fact that that is a Yovo nib that's kind of like a factory type modification nib. It's not something that is done by the actual, you know, pen manufacturer. This is something but that Yovo produces. So
yeah,
this is a factory.
It's the 14 carat Yovo flex nib with the whole
With the little scallops on the side. Yeah. So this is something that you would see with, I think Edison offers them, Franklin Christoph offers them. I'm thinking of a few other. I think Monte Grappa also offers them too. Nazionale Flex.
Didn't Laban also put one of those on one of their pens?
Yes, yes. They have those available on the 325 models, which is like the Flame and the Sun. And now there's a new purple one coming out called Wisteria. Mm-hmm. I haven't really had any experience with those because we really haven't, you know, had a lot of those come through. But like this time I figure, okay, well, it's on a Leonardo and it's instead of a plastic feed, we're talking a custom cut ebonite feed, which I'm like, all right, if there's going to be any flow issues, let's say Yovo standard feed, it's going to be knocked out of the park with a beautiful ebonite feed. And I was finding that definitely did, you know, keep up with it and everything, but it just doesn't quite flex as much as, you know, you probably would want it to. Like, I mean, most people, when they're thinking, oh, flex nib, like, I could get a lot of line variation. And I was comparing it against a Scribo, feel the flex in a fine point to kind of do an apples to apples fine point versus fine point comparison.
They're not even in the same ballpark.
Dude, night and day. And I'm like, when I put together a video for this thing, it's not only, because I think, and this was where I might go with when I'm buying my primary manipulation pen. I might get the Elastic Fine just because it's a little bit something different. And then you could certainly write with it as a fine point or just kind of add that little bit of, you know, a little bit of flair to your writing with the pressure, with the flex. Mm-hmm. It's something a little bit different. But like when you compare it against the Scribo feel the oh man,
yeah,
you, like we'll end up undoubtedly being like making people like salivate over the feel the flex one because
sure.
It's just like
sure oh. And just realize that feel the flex, that flex nib is closer to a wet noodle flex nib than any other modern flex nib on the market. I gotta say that the Yovo 14 karat flex with the scallops cut out the side, those mm-hmm. flex on par with like a Pilot Falcon.
Yeah.
It's a semi-flex at best. And
yeah.
This goes to show that the word flex in 2020 means something significantly different than flex in 1920. You know, they're definitions.
You could be flexing in front of a group of people to gain some sort of prestige or recognition, and then you could be flexing on paper to gain some sort of prestige or recognition by watching how awesome your calligraphy skills are, I guess.
No, what I mean is, like nowadays, we would call the standard 14 karat Yovo flex nib flex because it gives mm-hmm. some line variation, whereas in like the standard of what flex was in 1920 is much, much more line variation, right?
Yes.
So yeah. It's really not flex today. What's flex today is really, in all honesty, just a little bit of line variation, and it's semi-flex at best.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I haven't used the Leonardo custom ebonite feed that you've used, but you're saying that what it does is it alleviates the problem of ink starvation and railroading.
It keeps up really nicely. It's just that I found that if you try to push it too far or go too fast, you will kind of hit, you kind of have to know where that sweet spot is in terms of like the pacing and whatnot. Because if you go all of a sudden, you're just like, let me just see how fast this goes. And you just go really quick with like the swirlies and you're putting as much pressure on it as possible. It's going to like tell you, hey, that's not how I roll. Like I'm not a wet noodle flex.
Right.
But if you want to just kind of go at a nice even pace and you're writing and you're flexing as you're writing in a normal sort of way, not like wild gesticular fashion, then it will keep up. And that's why I wanted to kind of test it out a little bit more and show like writing demonstration of it, because you know then it gives people a better feel of like how, you know, where that might fit for them, if that is something that they're looking for, or if it's something that, you know, they want to pay the extra money and just get a Scribo. That's I compare it closely to, let's say, the Omas Ogiva, the extra Flessibile, and that's it's a beast, and it will keep up. Like, you know, it will keep up with your with even like even more aggressive writing styles. So
that's cool.
But that's where, you know, that's because of the fact that it is that based off of that old Omas nib tooling and everything like that. So right. They really got it right with that particular. But I mean, in its own right, like I said, the Elastic Fine is pretty neat, and I like the fact that it does give me that option to kind of put a little bit more line variation on it. And I mean, the nib writes nice and juicy wet because of that ebonite feed, and it's a piston fill, so it's a traditional piston fill. It's not like the previous version of the Momento Zero Grande, where it was like that fixed piston that's attached to the front section,
right.
Which I think that's a perfect, great evolution of that pen, was to just make it a traditional piston, because people are not going to be happy with that. And I know that I wasn't, when I opened it up and I was like, oh, this is, you know, a fixed piston that you can't remove, and you have to have like a card to tell people not to do it.
Right.
And when you tell people not to do something, that's
Guess
the
what?
One thing that they're
yep.
going to focus on wanting to do.
Oh, we're not supposed to remove it? Why not? It seems like I can yeah. do it. Let me see.
Oh, you know what's another thing that I've seen happen too, is that with going kind of on a little bit of tangent, but there was a card that comes with all the Sailor 1911 Wicked Witches, the ones with the black ion plated nibs. I didn't realize this until someone pointed it out, was that there's a card that when you open it up, it says that since the nib is black ion plated, to preserve the nib's finish, only use Sailor ink.
I translate that to just don't use Noodler's inks. I think that's what it means, because that stuff is
but I know for a lot of people, seeing that sort of card gives them plenty of pause when they're like, oh, I didn't know I can't use like any of my such and such type of ink, because now I need only Sailor ink, which, you know, to Sailor's credit, if all I had to use was just Sailor ink for the rest of my life, I would be happy as a peach. I would totally be fine with that. You'd be like, okay, you can cut out all the rest of the inks. I'll be fine with using Sailor ink for the rest of my life.
They have a good number of selection, but the point is,
oh yeah,
you know that's bullshit though, right? Like, there's like, you'll be fine using other inks because it's ion plated. Only use Sailor inks. So, I mean, I get why they say that. They're saying that because they can't account for what's in other brands' inks.
Right.
Like, understandable. I get that. But
that's the same thing that Edison did with the they're talking about not using boutique inks with, remember, the older Menlo had the sac plunger mechanism.
Yeah, that, I remember that.
And that ended up being a project that he ended up turning into just the pump filler, which doesn't have a sac, because he probably had so many people that, like me, I just fill pens up with whatever, and you break a sac, and that's just it, you know? Like, so it's just...
It would dissolve
it's just
the
that,
sac.
Yeah, it's just, like, it just ended up not being able to fill anymore, and, you can't account for the large collection of ink that people have and what it is that they put in their pens, so it's like, you have to kind of create a pen that is able to weather the most caustic of inks, I guess.
Yeah, I know. Listen, I get where Sailor's coming from, but like I said, I call bullshit on that. Like, you're using the Sailor pen because of the finish of the nib. I'm sure you're fine with Monteverde inks as well. I'm sure you're fine with the Leonardo brand inks. I'm sure you're fine with Aurora inks. I'm sure you're fine with a lot of inks. But of course, like I said, they can't account for the
Organic Studio Nitrogen,
yeah,
or Diamine November Rain, you know, things that are super saturated, or the shimmer,
right.
You know, the Diamine shimmer inks and things like that.
Yeah, they can't account for those, and sure, maybe they could take off the finish, but maybe not, or maybe make a fucking finish that doesn't dissolve because of ink, you know?
That's it,
you know,
yeah.
Like, try doing that. Don't tell me not to use other inks. Make a pen that won't dissolve. How's that? All right? Don't fucking
you
tell me.
That.
I'm only going to use your inks because yours is the only ones known not to dissolve your pens. Come on, man. You know, like, what happens if I gave that pen to someone and didn't give them the card? What's going to happen? Their pen nib is going to dissolve, lose the color. You know what I'm saying?
You know what what's funny is that I would imagine it would dissolve just like the Wicked Witch when she got the bucket of water thrown on her.
I see what you did there. Oh, that's a good one. You got it. Nice timing on that one.
But in other news, that whole entire segue discussion was just for that
punchline joke. In other news, latest additions to the Edison line. Look at this, a fucking cartridge converter Menlo.
Yeah.
At a reduced price. So they're adding this to the production line also.
Yeah. Yes, that's what I was really aiming to do when we were talking about doing the Newark. Mm-hmm. But it's cool to have the Menlo too, because the Menlo is like Edison's like pretty much number one selling pen besides, let's say, the Beaumont. Yeah, it's like super popular. But I think it's mostly because of the filling mechanism, the signature line. But I think a lot of people, including a friend of mine that I just saw earlier today, he wanted to, you know, he, like me too. It's like, it's just so much of a capacity, you know, it's like that you have with that. And it's also hard to clean, you know, when you're cleaning a pump filling pen. It's probably the one of the most pain in the ass pens besides like a vac filler that you can't take the nib out. But like this one of the most pain in the ass pens to clean, and just having an option of just being able to fill it up with a converter or a cartridge is just so much easier and more accessible. And the body type, I really enjoy it. I like the grip section, the length, the ability to post the pen. It's a nice pen overall, and I love writing with my Menlo. It's just that like I like changing inks a little bit more often, so it does become a little cumbersome to continue to have to clean that pen out all the time.
Yeah, and especially since the Menlo is a two-hand operational pump filler, so there's no spring. Mm-hmm. I actually came up with the idea of putting a spring on it and had Brian Gray throw in a spring, so that way you can just press the piston down and it comes back up on its own, kind of like the Twisby Go.
Right.
Only I came out with that idea about a year before the Twisby Go. And as a matter of fact, when I was doing the review of the Twisby Go, I think on one of my Twisby Go videos, somebody actually said, "Hey, that was your idea from the Edison Menlo pen." You know?
I think there should be some royalty checks heading your way.
And I actually said to Brian Gray, "Why don't you just add the spring from now on?" And he's like, "Oh, there's too much going into it. It's a great idea, but no." And you know, and it never took off, but I thought it was a great idea. I have a Menlo that has a spring built in, so that way I don't have to use two hands. I can just
Yours does not have the sack in it. So yours you could throw like Noodler's Bay State Blue or Noodler's Acid Vomit in it, and
I probably wouldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm definitely not gonna add those inks into it. I could if I wanted to, you know. It's a decent pen. I like it a lot. You know what the thing is, though? I'm going to be honest with you. As much as I love
it, I wouldn't expect anything less.
What?
The honesty.
No. I am starting to tire of pen brands that are using these mass-produced acrylics. You know? I mean, I know that it's what's available.
That's fair. That's fair. I mean, when you start seeing it like made in like, let's say, you know, America versus then you have the Taiwanese making pens that are in the same material, and then you have pens coming from China making the same material, and then you might have like, let's say, some European brands would be making them out of the same material or like a similar type of material. Mm-hmm. You know, it does start to become. That's why my personal, one of my things about the Yovo nib being so ubiquitous on pens is kind of like watering things down, is because, like, you know, it's like, well, you have, all you're just interchanging out is just the body of the pen then, essentially, because, and then now when you're talking about just the body of the pen and the nib, and it's like, well, now it's just a matter of like, well, this pen just has like a slightly different style clip, and like the length of it is this long, and then it's like polished like this or whatever. It becomes such a, you know, like it doesn't just start to be distinctive anymore.
Right.
That's why I really love the whole Brooks, you know, materials, or like the Mackenzie Penworks, the diamond cast material,
right,
or like what Franklin Christoph produces with the antique glass with the frosted, you know, interiors. It really gives you a lot of different look.
I was just about to say that too. Like Franklin Christoph, they also use a lot of stock mass-produced acrylics, but they do interesting things with it so that it doesn't seem as overused, whereas like Edison pens will look like, will have materials that are shared with other brands like Conklin or Pen BBS or these Chinese brands. You can clearly tell it's the same acrylic. Mm-hmm. And then after a while, when those acrylics are just used over and over and over again, it kind of feels like, oh, so it's one's $25, another's $170.
Yeah.
You know, it's just where is the difference coming from other than where it's made? You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And I don't like that discussion entering my brain, which is also a reason why I appreciate brands that are unique. For example, Pelican. No one makes a Pelican pen except right. for Pelican.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? And some acrylic pens, like Franklin Christoph, again, they do something different with it that's not mimicable, or rather appears unmimicked by other brands.
Yeah.
But I love Edison pens. Don't get me wrong. I just wish that they could do something a little different with what they have. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, if you look at the Colliers, that, what is it? It's the same one as a Duragraph. I forgot what the name of the Duragraph is, but...
Oh, we're talking about the one that's like the amber, the orange. Yeah,
the antique marble. Which one you're talking about. The antique marble right. in the Colliers is exactly the same as the amber Duragraph. And the antique marble is $169, and the Duragraph is, what, $57?
Mm-hmm.
Right, so like, and you know, what? Where's the difference? Okay, well, it used to be, well, at least the Edison comes with the Yovo nib, but guess what? Now, so do the Conklins. You know what I'm saying? And
right.
now it's in the finishing, and now it's in like the details and the smoothness of, yeah, I get
whether the top of your cap finial will actually match with where the clip is.
Exactly. You know, it's all those little details and stuff like that. It's just, mm-hmm. after a while, it kind of gets hard to say, oh, the value of $200 pen made with the same material is worth the value when you have the same pen at a lower price point. And it's not yeah. as easy as just saying, oh, it's cheaper, it's more expensive, and it's the same material. I get it. I certainly do.
Well, I think that's why you're seeing, especially with like the Menlos, you see, like, look at the production Menlos. Those are colors that you don't really see that often. You're kind of going a little bit more exotic with that sort of design. And if you look at also too, if you look at Edison has a pretty robust custom line, and mm-hmm. and they're kind of there where he started was that custom line where you could dream up a pen and be like, I would like it in this material in the cap, do like this in the section, do this in the body, put a roll stop on it, let's do this model, but like do it like an inch longer, you know. So he's always been kind of in that mentality of being able to like solve new problems based on what the customer's needs are.
Mm-hmm.
And if like, even like what I really like about what he's done with some things there too, is that he's done like, let's say the Mina, the Level, have you ever seen that pen where
he
does like the transparent grips, transparent section in the middle where it kind of looks like a bubble level when you fill it up with ink.
Sure.
So there's a lot of cool things that he comes up with. That's mostly for the custom line. But there's a lot of funky things that you could just go and look at all of those acrylic materials and be like, oh, I've never seen that on a pen before. Let me put that on a pen, you know? Mm-hmm. So like there's that, I think there's that whole element there, and that the production line, you know, kind of seems a little bit more watered down in terms of the, you know, the availability of acrylics across all models, because he probably has to kind of go to more commercial grade to be able to justify the price point compared with the signature line, you sure. know, which is a bit more hand-holding involved with the designs.
Mm-hmm. I could see that.
So
I wonder what everybody listening, what your favorite American pen brand is, if I missed any. Don't be shy. Let us know what pen brands we missed. The ones that I talked about today were Bexley, Edison, Franklin Christoph. Are we missing any?
Well, there's also, I mean, you want to just talk about fountain pen brands, right?
Yeah, yeah. Screw everything else.
What
the fuck do you think I'm talking about here, man?
Well, I mean, there are smaller pen makers, like we're talking about Pierre from Desiderata Pens.
That's an American brand, right?
Yes, he's based in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think also Scriptorium Pens, that's another one as well.
Oh, okay. Woodshed Pen Company.
Woodshed, we have also Birmingham, they're making pens out of there, Nick. Then there's also...
You know what's funny is you said they're making pens out of their Nick, and the owner's name is actually Nick. I see what you did there.
So, and also you have, well, should we mention Brooks, but Jonathan Brooks has his own company, Carolina Pen Company, which he makes his own pens. I'm trying to think. Canalea is technically in the U.S., but they get their pens, I believe, made from Jonathan. I think he also does their pens, but like they do their own like specialty like nib stuff on there.
Let me ask you something. Since we're on the topic of American brands, like if you look at pens like the Woodshed Pen Company and Birmingham Pens,
and Sean Newton too. Sorry, Sean Newton.
Sure.
You have to also
I don't think that they're me particular. I'm not a big fan of clipless pens.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if you're going to make a pen that doesn't have a clip, it has to be more than just a tube with a nib.
But I feel that that's like kind of the style these days.
Is it really?
Yeah, Karis Customs too. I'm sorry. I'm like throwing in. I just keep things keep popping in my head. So like I'm keep throwing American pen
like
brands
it.
Out there.
Yeah.
But that seems to be the style these days as far as like the term minimalist pens. But I just feel like minimalist is almost the excuse for pen makers just to throw you a cylindrical pen that is unadorned with any sort of design whatsoever.
That's exactly what I was saying. And I have a Woodshed Pen Company that's made this really cool material, gray and red, like metallic gray and metallic red. And I like it a lot. The material I like a lot. And I have a couple of Woodshed Pen Company, not Woodshed Pen, Birmingham Pens. And They're not bad pens. They have good nibs. They write well, but they're very plain and simple. And maybe right now I'm just not into that. Maybe I will be in the future, and I hold on to them because you never know. Tastes change over time, and what I say about it now might be different in 5 years. But I'm looking at it, and like you said, it's very plain. It's very simple, and I don't feel like it's appealing to me. Like I feel like
Another one too. Schon Design. Schon.
Sounds German.
Sgn. He's based in Pennsylvania, I believe.
Oh, okay.
I think he's they kind of ascribe to that design aesthetic where it's just like it's just a cylindrical barrel, no clip. But what's really cool about these is they're machined out of anodized aluminum, and you've got like all sorts of wackadoo crazy colors that they almost look like they're marbled acrylic, but they're actually made out of aluminum. So
really?
pretty cool designs on there.
I'll have to take a look at those.
But
what's your favorite American brand, all you savage inky savages out there? Let us know. Email us at pendertainmentpodcast@gmail.com. I do need to cut this week's episode a little bit short. Well, not too short. We're at 45 minutes. We usually draw it out to an hour because somebody who has kids between the two of us, not me, has some soccer games or some bullshit.
Their first game back from the coronavirus pandemic. So I'm very looking forward to seeing my boy play and take the field. And it's going to be a fun time.
All right. Well, because of that, we're going to have to cut this episode short. So if anybody's upset about it, just blame Tom. I'm not going to mention any names, but Tom's good. All righty. So, again, write us in. Give us your thoughts. PenTertainmentPodcast@gmail.com. And, by the way, I'm back in the swing of things with making video reviews on YouTube, so make sure everybody checks that out. I put up a review of a Goulet exclusive Elmo. Elmo's by Monte Grappa. It's a fun review. I think I hit all the good points. I got more reviews coming. I have them all typed out.
Awesome.
Yeah, because I knew how to type now without looking. So it does streamline things a bit. And it's funny because the quickest part about making a review is actually shooting it and editing it. That's the quickest part. The longest part is typing shit out. It's really weird,
You'll get better at it.
Getting quicker, typing, making less mistakes, and I'm practicing and whatnot.
Good.
Yeah. So thanks again for joining us. Love you guys. Be well. Be safe.
Stay geeky.